from the Radio Ranch in the heart of Liberty, Texas. It's the Bombastic Blogcast for Tuesday, September 10th, 2024. I'm the G-Man, Dan Gallo.
Hey, G-Man.
Be there yourself. Defender of the peace, keeper of the justice, purveyor of truth, the kid with the patriotic red, white, and blue eyes, and one heck of a nice guy. Let's get things officially started with
the Daily Datagram.
Yes, sir. Words of wisdom, words of inspiration, brain droppings, or noggin nuggets. You get to make the call. And this one comes to us from the late, great Victor Hugo, who said, "One can resist an intrusion of armies, but not an idea whose time has come."
Yeah.
Yeah. If only someone would come up with such an idea.
Surely you can't be serious.
Let's move along now to the so-called educational part of this big blogcast.
Twisted History.
Son of a gun.
Gather round, kids, because a lot of things happen on this day throughout history.
Just to help it.
Some cool, some not so cool. Just the same, you need to know your Twisted History.
Why?
You might be quizzed.
Oh, come on. You don't expect anybody to believe that, do you? Well, kids, it was on this day in 1932, the New York City Subway's third competing subway system, the municipally owned IND, was opened. Now, to better compete with the other two lines, they offered two sections for riders, spitting and non-spitting. And it was on this day in 1960, at the Summer Olympics in Rome, Abibi Bakila of Ethiopia became the first sub-Saharan African to win a gold medal, winning the marathon in bare feet. Wow. I can't even walk through my yard in bare feet.
Seriously, I want to get on my happy shoes.
When Nate Silver speaks, everybody listens. Or everybody who knows who Nate Silver is listens. Especially me. Who is Nate Silver? Well, he's an American statistician. He's a writer, a poker player who analyzes baseball, basketball, and elections. And he's the founder of 538 and held the position of editor-in-chief there, along with being a special correspondent for ABC News, until May of 2023. Since departing 538, he's been publishing on his Substack blog, Silver Bulletin. Does he make a living at that? Well, I guess so. But just the same, now you know who Nate Silver is. And election analysts, including, no, let's say particularly Nate Silver, are pointing to Donald Trump emerging as the leader in all the polls. And when it comes to the odds of his winning this election, they are greater than they've ever been. He now has a record high chance of winning the election. Now, Silver's odds have Donald Trump winning every single swing state. Wow. According to Silver, Trump has a 63.8% probability of winning the Electoral College. Now, this was a 5-point shift since last Thursday. So what's happening? Is Trump that good or is Kamala that bad? Well, actually, in this particular case, it's a combination of both. Trump is that good because he's got a track record to rely on. And we all can remember his track record. And yeah, Kamala's that bad. Now, Sunday night, Kamala had her little get together with, what was it, Univision or Telemundo? I think it was Univision. And that didn't go well. So tonight we have the debate between Kamala and Trump. Remains to be seen how well that goes. But I don't have a lot of hope for Kamala because I just don't think she's, no matter how well she's coached, I don't think she's got what it takes to win that. Now here's how the Washington Examiner reported things regarding Nate Silver. Election analyst Nate Silver gave former President Donald Trump a record-high probability of winning against Vice President Kamala Harris. The bump came partially as a result of Sunday's New York Times-Siena poll, which Silver has as one of the highest-rated pollsters. Silver's newest rating has Trump with a 63.8% probability compared to Harris' 36%. The former president is also favored to win every swing state. Silver's current odds give Trump a 64% chance of winning Pennsylvania, 54% for Michigan, 53% for Wisconsin, 77% for Arizona, 75% for North Carolina, 68% for Georgia, and 61% for Nevada. Wow. The new probability total is a nearly 5-point boost for Trump since Thursday when he was given a 58.2% probability, itself a boost from the 52.4% a week prior. The prediction shows a further eroding of Harris's honeymoon support since President Joe Biden dropped out in July. In a Substack post, Silver explained that the new poll was such bad news for Harris due to the large sample size and reliability of the poll, which he ranks as the second best. He said the new poll confirms the model's view that there's been some sort of a shift in momentum in the race. Well, we touched on something there in that last paragraph, and that is the size of the sampling. You see, the larger the sampling, the more accurate the poll is prone to being because you get a larger cross-section of people. Just simple math. Nothing, you know, no rocket science there. Just simple math. But this is a big deal. Now, if Kamala doesn't get her act together, and if she doesn't perform well tonight, these numbers are largely liable to spiral even larger, snowball to larger numbers in favor of Trump. So it'll be interesting. Watch the debate tonight. If you were looking for a face to put on this thing called TDS, you know, Trump Derangement Syndrome, I would have to say it would be the face of Liz Cheney. Now, she was on ABC Sunday with Jonathan Carl, who is a huge Democrat. Of course, everybody at ABC is Democrat. You may as well consider ABC to be the modern incarnation of Dr. Joseph Goebbels' propaganda ministry. And Jonathan Carl was talking with Cheney about various things regarding why Donald Trump is so dangerous for America and why she switched over to vote for Harris. But, and of course, her father, you know, Dick Cheney, has already made it clear that he's going to be voting for Harris. Jesus. But none of this is really surprising, right? Knowing what we know now and have known for the last several years about Dick Cheney. I don't know of anybody in my circle of friends who was really surprised by this. They just kind of, when the news came out the other day, we just kind of rolled our eyes and was like, yeah, that kind of figures. And they keep, both of them, both of the Cheneys, keep referring to Donald Trump as the greatest threat the United States has ever faced. And they keep falsely accusing him of attempting to violently overturn the results of the 2020 election. And this is what the Democrats do. So are the Cheneys now Democrats? Yes. They may not have said they're Democrats. They may not have registered as Democrats, but they are Democrats in behavior. And that, my friend, is good enough for me. They may as well be Democrats, the Cheneys. So anyhow, I would like to remind you of something very important in this overall Cheney chapter, and that is Liz was unanimously censured, as you recall, by the Wyoming Republican Party before being thoroughly rejected by voters. But she was on ABC with Jonathan Carl Sunday and just 100% echoed her dad's delusional rhetoric about the January 6th protests. Of course, then again, if either of the Cheneys, Dick or Liz, told me that it's a sunny day outside, I would go out on the front porch and look for myself. I just do not trust them. Dick Cheney, as you know, is the is really the poster child for the military-industrial complex. This guy enriched himself over the years through an outfit called Halliburton out of Houston, which provided a lot of Mideast war support for our troops. They fed the troops. They took care of a lot of the infrastructure at our bases over in the Middle East. So, yeah, Cheney and his daughter Liz are big warmongers. These are the people who are in the crosshairs of people like Tulsi Gabbard. And you know how I feel about Tulsi Gabbard. I mean, she is politically, and I think morally, she's a goddess. Tulsi Gabbard is just, I think she is the poster child for the moral compass of what our forefathers wanted for this country. Remember, it was George Washington who said, avoid foreign entanglements. Well, there has never been a foreign entanglement that the Cheneys didn't love. So, anyhow, Jonathan Carl talking to Liz Cheney about Donald Trump. And the subject matter came to who do you think that Ronald Reagan would support?
Bottom line, why did you make this decision to support Harris and why did you do it now?
Yeah, I've been voting for 40 years. My first vote I ever cast was for Ronald Reagan in 1984. I've never voted for a Democrat.
Wow.
It tells you, I think, the stakes in this election. Donald Trump presents a challenge and a threat fundamentally to the Republic. We see it on a daily basis. Somebody who was willing to use violence in order to attempt to seize power, to stay in power. Someone who represents unrecoverable catastrophe, frankly, in my view. And we have to do everything possible to ensure that he doesn't, that he's not reelected. Given how close this race is, in my view, again, it's not enough. You have many Republicans out there who are saying, well, we're not going to vote for him, but we will write someone else in.
Right.
And I think that this time around, that's not enough, it's important to actually cast a vote for Vice President Harris.
When it comes to national security, who would Ronald Reagan be supporting in this race? What do you think?
There is absolutely no chance that Ronald Reagan would be supporting Donald Trump. Donald Trump doesn't stand for any of the things that Ronald Reagan did. And it's another place where I would urge my Republican colleagues, both in the Congress but across the country, to really look at Donald Trump's policies, to really look at the danger that he presents, to look at what he was willing to do to stay in power. It's a firm rejection, not just of traditional Republican policies, but of the constitutional order on which this country depends.
And that statement at the end right there is the most glaring evidence that we have that Liz Cheney suffers from Trump derangement syndrome. There is no way in the world that Ronald Reagan would not be supporting Donald Trump. I mean, because the two men have too much in common. And for one thing, Trump admires what Reagan accomplished. And Trump has always been very vocal about Ronald Reagan. I mean, back during Reagan's time in office, Trump supported the moves that Ronald Reagan was making, particularly the moves toward peace through strength. So, if you're a real follower of Ronald Reagan, of course, you have to be of a certain age, unless you're a real student of Ronald Reagan, and I don't know many of those, but, I shouldn't say that. I'm sure there are quite a few students of Ronald Reagan out there. But if you really study the policies and the behavior of Ronald Reagan, you can see that the man truly believed in strength or peace through strength. Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall. By the way, I would recommend you see the Ronald Reagan movie. Now, if you don't want to spend the bucks to see it on the big screen, rent it in a couple of months when it comes out on DVD. But it's an excellent movie and seemed to be pretty accurate. The one thing that they didn't depict in the film, which I wish they had touched on, was the invasion of Grenada. When Castro sent his troops over to Grenada to take over the U.S. University over there, the American University on Grenada. And Ronald Reagan didn't flinch. He went over there and kicked the Cubans out and did it in a matter of just a couple of days. That is how you handle things. That is the way Donald Trump would handle things of that nature. So I see a lot of similarities between Donald Trump's attitude, political attitudes, and those of Ronald Reagan. I think of incidents, too, when Ronald Reagan told the students over there at Berkeley, there is nothing to negotiate. The students wanted to negotiate. And Ronald Reagan just looked at him and said, there is nothing to negotiate. And then he started having people arrested. There was nothing to negotiate. The kids were out of line, and Ronald Reagan pointed that out to them. And he had the firepower behind him to back that up. You know, so, and again, you know, the iconic phrase, Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall. What a gutsy thing to say. And there were people within the administration at the time who didn't want him to say it. They thought it was going to be far too provocative. But you see, the reason Ronald Reagan had the courage to say that is because he had gotten to know Gorbachev. They had met a couple of times. Ronald Reagan read this man's personality, looked into his eyes. He understood who he was dealing with. And he understood, Ronald Reagan understood, that the timing was perfect. Shame what was left of the Soviet Union. Tear down this wall. And Gorbachev, being the good man that he was, and when it came to Russian leaders, he was one of the best of his time. The best of his time. And Gorbachev, being the kind of a person that he was, understood that it was time to take down that wall. And it was time to make some kind of a resolution of the huge cultural and political divide between East and West, right there, Eastern and Western Europe. And I would have to say the European continent is far better for it. Can you imagine what the European continent would be like today if it hadn't been for Ronald Reagan? So meanwhile, you got Liz and Dick Cheney, and they're nothing more than just a couple of, couple of ticks in the skin of politics. And they can be disposed of. And they will be, through attrition. They're going to fade away into nothingness. You have probably heard that Harley Davidson has announced a major rollback of the diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives, the DEI initiatives, right? And, of course, this had to come in the wake of a relentless campaign led by not just Harley Davidson customers, who, believe me, were plenty loud, but also conservative activist and filmmaker Robbie Starbuck. Now, we've talked about him before. I have talked about him before on, in fact, a recent podcast. I don't recall which date it was, though. But anyhow, he's made it his mission to challenge what he describes as leftist ideologies infiltrating American companies. He's doing a good job of this, too. I mean, he's making films about it. If you don't know who Robbie Starbuck is, if you get a chance, just go to YouTube and type his name in. Go to the World Wide Web. He's a very interesting individual. He's known for his very successful boycotts. Boycotts against companies like Tractor Supply and John Deere. And he turned his attention to Harley Davidson in July through a series of social media posts, some videos. He criticized the company's involvement in various progressive causes, including its support for LGBTQ plus pride events, DEI training for employees, and partnerships with organizations like the Human Rights Campaign. And he accused Harley Davidson of betraying its core customer base, which they did. They did this big time. Traditional, freedom-loving bikers, and you're going to push DEI to them? And Harley Davidson's new big cheese, I don't know that he was the CEO, but I believe he had a European background. He came in there and he was going to adopt policies that align with leftist agendas. Well, Robbie Starbuck responded very quickly. And the pressure from his campaign proved too much for Harley, which had already been facing backlash from customer base. So on August 19th, the company announced it would dismantle its DEI initiatives and end its association with various progressive causes, including LGBTQ plus advocacy groups. And they issued a statement. where they expressed regret over the division caused by its policies and emphasized its renewed commitment to focusing on the sport of motorcycling and its loyal customer base. The timing was pretty good, too, because all of this stuff hit the fan about the time they were having the annual huge event in South Dakota. The name of the town, Sturgis. Okay, thank you. I guess I'm still waiting for my brain cells to congeal. I've been on cold medicine for the last week. Labor Day weekend, I started coming down with it was a spring allergy running about 3 months late. And I've been on various cold medicines, but I try to stay away from the mind-altering cold medicines. Anyhow, yeah, the Sturgis event. This whole thing went down around the time of the Sturgis event. And it wasn't pretty. So the reversal naturally highlights a broader trend among American brands, because they're grappling now with the fallout from embracing socially progressive policies. Here again, the progressives only account for a small percentage of the total population of this country, and yet we bend to their every damn whim. Why do we always kowtow to these idiot progressives? They are a gross minority. So Harley's decision echoes similar retreats by other companies. Tractor Supply is another one of them. I couldn't believe Tractor Supply, of all places, was going to kowtow to the progressive left. But they finally came about their senses. Now, naturally, the move has drawn mixed reactions from the public. You got a lot of conservatives praising Harley for correcting their course. But there are some others, and I won't say they're conservatives, but there are others who remain skeptical, calling for further changes at the executive level. And I would tend to believe that these others remaining skeptical are progressives, probably closet progressives. But Robbie Starbuck's campaign against Harley follows his successful efforts to push back against other corporate giants, because earlier this year, he was very successful with Tractor Supply, homed in on their LGBTQ+ training. And when you look at Harley's decision to abandon their DEI programs, it's seen as a victory by most conservatives who've long opposed the influence of leftist ideologies in corporate America. Because eventually, if left unchecked, eventually those leftist ideologies would filter down on the customer level. And it has. I mean, look what Disney has done. Disney has made a mockery of itself. I mean, thousands of American families won't touch Disney with a crowbar. They will not go to Disney parks. And amidst all of this DEI crap at Disney, along with it, their prices skyrocketed. I mean, you are going to get fleeced as a family if you try to take your family to Disney these days. Now, the backlash from the reversal underscores the deep cultural divide. We keep talking about the cultural war here in the United States. Companies are increasingly finding themselves at the center of political and social battles. Just make your products. Execute your services. Serve the public. Your only guiding star should be demand. All right? Serve the public. Stay out of politics. There's no reason in the world why soda waters, automobiles, clothing items should be getting involved in politics. This is a land of supply and demand. If there's a demand for a product, and you want to fulfill that demand, do it to the best of your ability. Stay the hell out of politics. So, for now, Harley-Davidson's shift away from progressive initiatives marks a pretty important moment in the ongoing cultural conflicts playing out in corporate boardrooms across the country. You know, whether other companies are going to follow suit remains to be seen, but the pressure from activists like Starbucks suggests that the battle over corporate America's soul is far from over, and it's going to be a long battle. But I think the shot heard round the world was that Dylan Mulvaney crap with Bud Light. Representative James Comer, who's a Republican out of Kentucky, raised some serious concerns about the potential influence of the Chinese Communist Party, the CCP, on U.S. political figures, specifically pointing to Tim Walz as a possible target. Now, Comer, who currently serves as the chairman of the House Oversight Committee, suggested that it's very possible that China could be grooming Walz to gain leverage within the U.S. government, which, of course, further exacerbates national security concerns that are being expressed in Washington these days. And his remarks, made during a recent appearance on Newsmax's Wake Up America, have ignited a pretty fresh wave of scrutiny over the extent of foreign interference in American politics. Now, everybody knows how aggressive China is when it comes to finding out more about us. I mean, they're buying how much farmland here in the United States? The Chinese government, the CCP, buying farmland here in the United States. And so when conservatives try to put a stop to it, then what happens? You get these Asian American groups who have become very vocal lately, complaining that, well, now Chinese Americans are finding it hard to buy property, which is bullcorn. That's not happening. But anyhow, Comer's comments came in the wake of ongoing investigations by his committee into the Biden family's alleged financial connections, particularly with China. And Comer highlighted how these investigations have unveiled what he describes as a pattern of corruption, where U.S. officials may be compromised by foreign adversaries. You think? Here again, how do these people get elected as senators and congressmen on a salary of, what, $174,000 a year, which really is not enough to live on in Washington, D.C., believe me. It's very expensive to live there. But how is it that they go in on a salary of $174,000 a year and all of a sudden they become wealthy? I mean, look at all the property that Biden owns. The man is as corrupt as the day is long. And most of your politicians in Washington are corrupt. My God, all you have to do is grease their palms a little bit. And believe me, this corruption is going on both sides, on the part of both political parties. Let's head on over to the Comedy Corner with Fred Klett.
I think experience helps all marriage a lot. What at one time might have ended up in an argument now might not because of experience. And I'll give you an example of that. This happened in my house. I'm not making this up. I'll simply preface this story by saying it was that time of the month. And it was. Okay, just a handful of people know what I'm talking about. I'm sitting at the kitchen table pouring some cereal for breakfast. My wife comes in the room and very nicely asks, shall I make us some bacon and eggs? I assumed my pouring the cereal was the answer. Okay, a lot of you are missing a key point here. I did not verbally respond. My wife leaves the room, I pour the milk, I'm eating my cereal, I'm relatively happy. Because I still don't know. That I've messed up. My wife comes back in the room, sees me eating the cereal, and that caused a chemical reaction. Her eyes rolled back, and her voice, you are rude. Ah. 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 You did not respect me. Ah. Lord must punish you with pain. Receive your punishment now.
This is where experience kicked in. I knew immediately, do not make eye contact. Look down. Don't move. Movement will attract it. Play dead.
Get out there and make it a terrific Tuesday. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you on tomorrow's bombastic blogcast. Remember, no such thing as spare change, free lunch, or too much horsepower. And you be sure to take some time today just to thank the good Lord that you're an American.
You mean that's it?
See you tomorrow, G-Man.